It's fascinating when you look through the interpretation of this passage down through church history and how that interpretation has been shifted by the current fashion of parental theory. Back in the ancient commentaries, you'll find people actually defending Jacob for how he treated Joseph. Does not the dad have the right to pick out which one of his sons is most worthy of honor? You won't find that around anymore.
Welcome to The God-Centered Life with Josh Moody. Continuing our move through the book of Genesis in our series called A New Beginning, this particular lesson called A New Dream, and we're looking at Genesis 37. Josh Moody is senior pastor of College Church in Wheaton, Illinois, and I'm Todd Bastide. Well, Josh, it's been interesting as we approach this story, and I'm kind of getting rid of the black and white distinction of Joseph good, brothers bad. Sounds like we're going to be sorting out a bigger cast of characters and who's contributing to what today.
Absolutely. I love that phrase, the cast of characters. There are different nuances here about the personality types and the moral culpability of us all that lead us to the sovereign grace of God and finding mercy ultimately in Jesus Christ.
Well, if there's any section of the Bible that reads like a Hollywood script,
yeah,
it's certainly this story.
Yeah.
So let's jump in. Genesis 37, A New Dream. Here's Josh.
Well, do go ahead and keep the Bible open at Genesis chapter 37. That's what we'll be looking at this morning, the story of Joseph. As it begins, the generations of Jacob, the family story of Jacob and his children, and prominent in that is Joseph. In recent years, it's been popular to have musicals of historical figures. It was a very popular New York musical that I think has either come to Chicago or will come to Chicago soon. Some years ago, there was a musical of Joseph, the story of Joseph. And it was pretty popular for a while. It may still be out there somewhere or other in some nether regions of musical life. Joseph and the amazing Technicolor dream coat. And in that story, Joseph is introduced for us as, of course, the main character of that musical and indeed the main character of the next few chapters of this book of Genesis. Joseph is introduced for us as singing a song, and he describes himself in this way. And I won't attempt to sing, you'll be glad to know. He says, I'll just say it. He says, "I'm handsome, I'm smart, I'm a walking work of art." And he sort of prances around like this, you know. What is that the right interpretation of this story? And how are we to discover? Is Joseph indeed that kind of slightly, well, perhaps not slightly, extremely ambitious individual, young man, who is pruning his feathers and presenting himself to everyone else, whatever their feelings may be, whatever their ambitions may be? I'm handsome, I'm smart, I'm a walking work of art. But then we have to ask ourselves, what about the other characters in the story? What about his dad, Jacob? Who, as a father, would actually treat their children in the way that he does, singling out one of them for this kind of treatment? Our family just got back from taking, like many of you probably have, a couple of days spring break. And there was a discussion in our family as to where we would go. I quite like the idea of finding a nice little cabin in the middle of nowhere and it being really quiet and reading a good book. I got outvoted. And we went to the Dells, which is a little bit different. And as I was sitting there trying not to be sort of, you know, snooty about the Dells, I did observe many different families as they were bouncing down the water slides and how they interacted with each other. Some of the family interactions were anything but good. One dad, I observed, singled out his son, who had obviously done something wrong, and gave him a tongue lashing you would not believe in front of everyone else, where this poor young man had to receive it with his siblings around him and me watching on, trying not to look like I was watching too much. As a pastor, I was on the verge of intervening, saying, "What are you doing? You're damaging this kid for years." Well, Jacob did not do that. He did the absolute opposite. He picked out Joseph and exalted him above his brothers. Now, Jacob doesn't turn out too well in this story either. But then there are the brothers. And as the story carries on, they actually sell their brother into slavery, which is hardly an idyllic kind of sibling relationship. It would make its way onto some rather outrageous daytime talk shows as an example of the kind of thing not to do in family life. You can imagine the talk show host saying, "Tell me about the time when you sold your brother into slavery," so everyone could hear. Clearly, there are these characters in the story, and as we get into it, we have to figure out what is the right interpretation. It's fascinating when you look through the interpretation of this passage, down through church history, and how that interpretation has been glossed or shifted by the current fashion of parental theory. Back in the ancient interpretive commentaries, you'll find people actually defending Jacob for how he treated Joseph. Does not the dad have the right to pick out which one of his sons is most worthy of honor? You won't find that around anymore. How are we to interpret this? Well, let's look at these three different sets of characters that are right embedded in the story. And at the end, there's one other character, a little hidden, but most important. So first, there is Joseph. Joseph is 17. He's a teenager. He's at the age of dreaming. He is, in all likelihood, given the family dynamics of his father with two wives and a clear argument between different parts of the family and lots of older brothers, he's probably likely to have felt somewhat estranged from his brothers anyway. Charles Spurgeon says this, "I have noticed how often God looks with eyes of special love upon those in a family who seem least likely to be so regarded. It was a Joseph whom his brothers hated. It was upon the crown of the head of him who was separated from his brothers that God's electing love descended." Perhaps you feel like that in your family sometimes. You're the youngest, or almost the youngest, as Joseph was, and you feel like you've been looked over for blessing. Perhaps you can resonate with how Joseph behaved when he was given an opportunity to push himself to the head of the line, finally. We can resonate with his feelings for sure. But then Joseph, we're told, brought a bad report to his father about his brothers. There's a little bit of a history of interpretation here as well. The Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, suggests, though it's not really quite clear there, suggests that actually it was the brothers who brought a bad report about Joseph, though the Hebrew is, as we have it translated here, that Joseph brought a bad report about his brothers, indicating the unease that interpreters have felt down through the years to give Joseph any kind of bad interpretive grid in their teaching of the passage. But no, it seems pretty clear that Joseph did bring a bad report to his father about his brothers. It's quite possible that Joseph was playing up his advantage with his father, who already, we're told, favored him, by whispering ill news into the ready ears of his dad. already predisposed to believe that Joseph could do no wrong. And anything bad that happened must be the fault of one of the other of his children, the less favored children. Actually, this phrase, ill report or bad news, is used in the Bible later when the spies go into the land. And those who bring back a negative interpretation of the promised land are not predisposed to believe that God will give them the land. We're told to bring, same phrase, a bad report. It's a sort of slander. It is possible that Joseph took perhaps a negative event in which his brothers were involved and magnified it to the maximum possible, or it's possible that he took an entirely innocent circumstance, even a good thing, like with the promised land, and made it look woeful in the eyes of his father. And here immediately is an application. If he did behave that way, he is not the first nor the last to use the blunt instrument of gossip to gain an advantage over peers. The office gossip is not only being malicious, he or she is enacting a deliberate strategy, often deliberate, perhaps not always, but a strategy to cast their competitors for work in a negative light. So the boss now looks at all their work through a malicious lens, a bad report. What is more, Joseph was surely at the very least unwise in the way he reported his dreams too. Now he was 17, and 17, as I said, is the age of dreaming. He was an ambitious young man, probably rather gifted. After all, he did a good job of running the whole of Egypt. He must have had some natural capacities. He probably somewhere inside knew he could run a country. And when the dreams came to him, they resonated with his internal sense of capacity. But he was unwise with how he reported those dreams, was he not? Did he need to set up a soapbox and stand on it and tell his brothers just how exalted he had been in his dreams? If indeed that interpretation is the right one of those dreams. He seemed to think at this stage that it was, that he'll be lifted up and they will be pushed down. But later in this Jacob story of the family, which Joseph is the prominent character, Joseph has a rather different interpretation of those dreams. When finally he is premier of Egypt and his brothers do bow before him, Joseph then responds, not with, "Oh yeah, quite right, you should be bowing before me." He responds by saying, "Am I in place of God?" Not just a more tactful approach, a more theological approach. Joseph was not there for his own exaltation, but for the exaltation of another. But here at 17, he could not grasp that, or at least he did not have the wisdom to express it correctly. Here in his youthful ambition, his eager zeal spilled over into at least unwise provocation, if not a sort of flagrant waving of a red rag before the bulls of his brothers. Did he not realize that they also had their own ambitions? What were their dreams? He did not appear to even ask himself that question.
We'll jump back into broadening our cast list in just a moment. Meantime, though, wanted to let you know you're listening to The God-Centered Life with Josh Moody. If you're just joining us, welcome. We're glad you're here. In a few moments, we'll tell you how you can access past studies and other resources designed to help you pursue that God-centered life. Josh Moody, Senior Pastor of College Church in Wheaton, Illinois. Back to our study now, Genesis 37. Here's Josh.
So there is Joseph. But then, is that really what the story is about? That kind of moral lesson about Joseph? Or is it about Jacob? After all, as we said at the beginning, who on earth would be so foolish as a father to single out one of his children for a special gift and not give anything to the others? Can you imagine that Christmas? Yes, it's Christmas Eve, everyone's gathered around the tree, or it's Christmas morning, and yeah, we've all got gifts. No, actually, we don't. Only Joseph has a gift. Isn't he wonderful? But it was not just a gift. It was a gift with deep symbolism. Whether it was multicolored, as it's traditionally translated and is here in our version, or a robe of particularly long sleeves, we don't quite know. But what we do know, before this phrase is used elsewhere in the Bible, this kind of garment, what we do know is that it was indicative of a royal person. He, as it were, gave him a crown. Or he put him in sort of presidential limousine while his brothers had to cycle past in their bicycles. He had a presidential suit on while his brothers had to go around in Walmart jeans. It's a none too subtle indicator of where his loyalties and his love lay. What's more, we do not meet Jacob rebuking Joseph for his first dream about his brothers. Oh, he rebukes him later when he dreams about the second dream, and he rebukes him for sort of sharing that in a way that seemed to give him prominence over his parents. But there's no record here of him being rebuked for trying to get prominence over his brothers. He loved Joseph. But his love was most unwise, if not actually selfish. Chrysostom, the ancient preacher, put it like this. He said, even parental love can do harm to the children when it is practiced without restraint. It may give the child free rein from an excessive indulgence. In other words, you see, we parents have to be careful that our love for our children is not an expression of what is best for the child, but an expression of what we felt that we missed when we were children. Surely Jacob felt that he had not been sufficiently loved by his own father, and indeed had been marginalized by his own father. So to compensate, he picked out the one that he most favored and poured all that frustration into Joseph. It was deeply selfish love, and therefore not really love in its full expression. What is that? What the story is about? Or is it about the brothers? Now, we have to have some sympathy with these brothers. Can you imagine having Joseph wandering around, as it were, saying, I'm handsome, I'm smart, I'm a walking work of art, to be enough to want to clonk him one, wouldn't it? If clonk is a word. But you knew what I meant, so that was good. Yeah, there's a lot of empathy here. No wonder they felt jealous. But that emotion of jealousy that we can empathize with, they did not seek to remove. It's almost as if they, having tasted it, swallowed it. They nurtured it until it became hate. It's hard to blame them for the initial emotion, but it is pretty easy to blame them for allowing that emotion to stew until they hated their brother. And indeed, as the story goes on to say, sold him into slavery. They clearly take on Joseph and tell him off for this, but there's no record of them going to their father to ask him to deal with the matter, which would have been a better approach, I think. Jealousy. The blessing of God in Genesis chapter 1 that had been spurned by Adam and Eve and then left to the murderous fraternal relationship of Cain and Abel, and was now about to have another bitter root of hatred, and if not murder, being sold into slavery. Yeah, no one comes out looking very good, do they? And certainly there's a lot of moral application to work with here as a preacher. Oswald Chambers put it like this. He said, sanctification is not my idea of what I want God to do for me. Sanctification is God's idea of what he wants to do in me. It would be easy, wouldn't it? And I think right at one level to preach this text in terms of that moral framework alone, though I think there is more. But the moral application is very clear in all sorts of ways. Parents, do not selfishly pour out your affection on your children in such a way that you're allowing for jealousy to breed within the family. Bible study leaders, with your Bible study group, do not exalt one above the other and allow jealousy and envy to emerge. If you're called to lead, you're called to love. Young men, with youthful zeal, even perhaps for God and for his kingdom and for the glories of Christ, and perhaps very gifted. Remember, there are other people. There are other people in the kingdom. And your ambition is to be tempered not only by serving Christ, but by doing it in community, in the church, with other people sometimes having prominence. And those of us, all of us, who at times think, I wish I was like that celebrity. I wish I was on TV. I wish my blog had not, 500 followers, but 15, 20,000 like X well-known person. And we find within us an envy. And of course, the back of that envy is pride. The pride that says, what I should be there. There's a lot of moral application here.
That's Josh Moody, and this is the God-Centered Life. We will get to that moral application next time we get together. Lessons for everyone here, Josh. So we got Joseph, and as you mentioned, clearly talented, and those talents used so strategically by God. But it sounds like you're also saying he lacked what we today would call emotional IQ to navigate his family wisely.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we may be reading between the lines a little bit, but here's someone who's obviously got a lot to say about all the great things he's going to do. And of course, that's pretty hard for someone else to hear, isn't it? I mean, it's not exactly how to win friends and influence people. You know, I've got a dream. I'm going to tell you how great I'm going to be. It's like, well, thanks very much. What about me? But Joseph doesn't seem to have that kind of mindset yet.
And the odd thing is that he's right.
Yeah, God does. And that's the nuance. I mean, he's true. He is great. And he is going to be greatly used by God, an amazingly gifted man.
Yeah. All right. So then we lumber over to Jacob's side of this whole drama. And what's the best way for us to guard against selfishly loving in the way that you describe Jacob doing?
Well, I suppose our loves need to be centered ultimately on God's will for us, as revealed in Scripture. If we have what I suppose a theologian might call disordered loves, loves for ourselves rather than for others, then remember how much we have been loved.
Interesting. So it sounds like you're saying Jacob loved Joseph because of what Joseph did for Jacob emotionally.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you for that, Josh. GodCenteredLife.org is where you can find past studies. We've had some wonderful studies that you can explore at your leisure. And this will be your last opportunity to pick up Sinclair Ferguson's fantastic rendering of the children's song, Jesus Strong and Kind, a wonderful book for multiple generations. Available on our website, GodCenteredLife.org. A gift of any amount, we'll happily send it your way. That web address, one more time, GodCenteredLife.org. Next time, we're talking about your Josephness.
We live in a culture that is embossed with the idea of the American dream. We have been told over and over again, you've got to have a dream, for if you don't have a dream, how can that dream come true? We are Josephs, every single one of us.
Genesis, A New Beginning. The series continues when we get together next time. One more reminder, GodCenteredLife.org resources for you, and this is your invitation to join us for the next edition of The God-Centered Life with Josh Moody.